listening to WXRWLP Milwaukee 104.1 FM and RiverWestRadio.com globally. Hello, I'm your host, NTSC, and welcome to The Anti, a weekly primer on freedom. The Anti is anti-authoritarian, anti-capitalist, anti-hierarchy, anti-sexist, anti-racist, anti-fascist, and more. If we're against so much, what do we stand for? Well, the ideals of freedom. In this series, we explore what a free society might look like while recognizing that none of us today are truly free. Having said all that, even though the device you're listening on right now likely wasn't free, the radio waves you're listening to are. WXRW costs money to operate, though. To that end, you can always visit the station at 824 East Center Street, Milwaukee, Wisconsin, and purchase yourself a hat or a mug or a t-shirt, and all proceeds will go directly to supporting the station. Or if you like some of the programming on WXRW, reach out and become an official underwriter. And you can also dial into River West Radio on your smart speaker. Tell your device to play WXRW River West Radio. We're on 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. I am a really lucky guy. I try to take at least a few moments every day of my life to recognize just how lucky I really am. My therapist years ago, when I had the opportunity to undergo talk therapy, gave me a homework assignment with the proposed outcome of helping me remember just how fortunate I am and to give me the power to lift myself out of depression and hopefully to stave off panic attacks. The exercise was really simple. Just make a list of five things for which I am grateful. And I keep this list in my wallet, and I have ever since. It's here in front of me, and I keep it on my person at all times. And the list is titled In Case of Emergencies, and it goes like this in descending order. Sarah, my wife, family, friends, health, and then energy slash spirit. I am extremely lucky. I'm lucky to have a family that I not only love, but who I genuinely like. I'm friends with my sisters and my cousins and my aunts and my mom and my dad, and I like them a lot as people. I respect them and I appreciate them for everything that they are. And not everyone gets a good family, you know, with whom they can relate. Not everyone gets family members who let them be themselves, you know, and respect them for that. And I'm also lucky in that I really love and like most of my in-laws. You know, comedians and all the terrible sitcoms will make frequent jokes about in-laws, you know, mothers-in-law and fathers-in-law and blah, blah, blah. I love most of my wife's family, with only a few notable exceptions. I especially love and really know best her sister and her sister's little family. Her sister and her sister's husband were both raised in Madison, but they moved to Colorado years ago when the mountains kind of called to them. There's such a thing as a feeling of a sense of place, you know, a sense of belonging and rightness in your environment. I'm lucky to feel that I have a place here in Milwaukee. I feel a rightness here. And I feel that I can do good work here, that I can have an impact, positive impact. My sister-in-law and her family have a real sense of place in Colorado. I like to say that their puzzle pieces fit there kind of perfectly. They have two little kids, and man, they are absolutely mountain babies. Colorado is vital to them. So recently, their family suffered a terrible tragedy in the loss of a close relative who was taken from them way too young. So my brother-in-law's sister died very suddenly from an aggressive form of brain cancer. She was only in her 40s. So my in-laws came back to Madison, you know, where they were raised as much as they could in the brief time that they had to say their goodbyes. But they couldn't afford to be there when my brother-in-law's sister passed away. He could not afford to be there when she slipped into a coma, and he was forced to say his final goodbye over the phone. So I talk a lot about structural violence on this show because it's of primary importance. Structural violence has a directly measurable impact, right? We can count. 36 million people starve to death every year of preventable poverty. 6 million of those are children under the age of 12. We can count the 70 billion animals that we raise and torture and rape and murder every single year for meat consumption. And we can count the millions who sleep on the street every night of the year, despite empty housing outnumbering the homeless 6-1. Structural violence is thus quantifiable. So this week's episode is about something less measurable, but no less horrible, and I'll call it structural cruelty. Let's define structural cruelty as suffering endured by everyone on a personal and emotional level, caused by factors relating to the system in which we live, and generally accepted as inherent, inevitable, and unalterable, despite the very plain fact that there is nothing inevitable or unalterable about it. So let's return to the sad example of my brother-in-law's sister. Because of the system of exchange, wage slavery, and enforced unnatural scarcity under which we all labor, my brother and sister-in-law both work. They need to work full-time to support themselves and their two children. Okay. Most everybody's going to take that as a given, despite the fact that it's a blatant form of structural violence. Guarding the necessities of life behind a paywall is structural violence, but it's taken as a given. Okay. So his sister gets sick, and they drive the 16 hours or so to Madison straight through. No rest, to spend as much time with her and the rest of his family as they can. So the grief and the anxiety of her diagnosis weighs on them terribly. And that should be more than enough stress, you know, for a family to deal with. The fear of losing a loved one is truly agonizing. But along with that burden comes the additional stress of the dwindling vacation time he and his wife both have from their jobs. They don't have much to begin with. And what little they do have, they've already used to visit family over the summertime. So this trip to visit his sister will run them completely out of any vacation time they had remaining. The amount of time they will get to spend for the funeral and grieving will be painfully short, as you can imagine. That is structural cruelty. The fact that they could not afford to be in Madison to comfort either his sister or his grieving family. That they could not afford to. That statement is so vicious and yet so universally accepted, with just a shrug and the empty platitude, that's just the way it is. He will never get that time back. He was robbed of his opportunity to spend time, our most precious resource, to spend time with his sister, whom he will never see again. And how many of us have similar experiences? We wish we would have had more time for X, Y, or Z, to see grandma, or to visit grandpa, or to visit someone we love, to do literally anything we wish we could do, but we'll never be able to afford to. That is structural cruelty. So my wife works for a small health clinic that serves a very underprivileged population. So I'll note, it's very important for the purposes of this example, to note that the population they serve is at extremely high risk because of their very, very low income bracket. The people that they serve are whole families that live one disaster away from dying on the streets, basically. Okay, so one of my wife's coworkers recently came down with a really nasty cold. She recently had a beautiful little baby, their first baby, she and her partner. And obviously due to lack of sleep of being a young parent, her immune system was very compromised and she got the flu. A really nasty flu. So she had no remaining sick time or leave of any sort because she used all of it to recover from childbirth. So she's very ill and had to go into work, sick as a dog. And in so doing, endanger not only her own life and health, but the lives of everyone she worked with and everyone with whom she came into contact by exposing them to a potentially dangerous illness. But there was nothing she could do. She had no vacation time or sick time to take off. And instead of risk being fired, she needed to suck it up and go into work. People do that all the time. And, you know, we could make a really good argument for that being structural violence, but it is absolutely, undeniably structural cruelty. And yet it's just accepted as a given. I'm sure you at some point got very ill and just had to suck it up and go to work and risk spreading your illness and risk making your illness worse. And looking at the example of my wife's coworker, we could myopically blame the clinic, you know, for which she works and its regulations, you know, with regards to vacation and sick time. Or we could blame the lack of guaranteed paid sick leave in America. But both of those knee-jerk assessments would be missing the root cause. She was afraid of being fired because she needs to work to earn money to secure the basic essentials of life for herself and her child. Structural violence, at the very core of our society, is what that is an example of. And that's why it's called structural. It's not a symptom of the systems of our society. It is a fundamental basis of them, and it is a cruelty. Let's look at another form of structural cruelty that lies in plain sight for everyone to see, and yet we don't acknowledge it ever. And maybe it's because it is everywhere to the degree that we can't see it, where you can't see the forest for the trees, or maybe it's just too universally accepted as a truth and we've all internalized it so fundamentally that we can't even imagine anything else. Or maybe it's because it's just too sad to really recognize and address. Okay, so we all need to work to survive in this system, right? We need to clock in at a job, to put in a certain amount of hours before we can leave and do what we want. Okay, that's a given. What is also a given is that we are mortal. The days and the hours of our lives are finite. And what happens after death is unknown. Okay, you know, religions and spiritualities will devise varying explanations for what happens after death. But what is not up for debate is the fact that we die. We will all die eventually. We don't have forever, right? Our minutes are limited. Okay, we've stressed that point. So the clock exists as an ever-present reminder of how much time we have left. And we talked about this in the episode on time. How much time until the game starts? How much time until I have to get to work? How much time until I can leave and do what I want? And in point of fact, 1/3 of your whole life is spent at work doing a job. 1/3 of our limited lives. Now, consider the true cruelty of this little gem. We spend 1/3 of our whole lives watching the clock and hoping and praying and wishing the hours will fly by so we can go home or to the bar or to the party or anywhere that isn't work. We only get so many hours of life, and we spend a third of them hoping that they'll go by faster, hoping that they'll fly by. When we're happy, when we are enjoying our lives, we want time to slow down because we want to savor that sensation of joy. And it really does feel like it's flying by when you're having fun, to the point where we have a saying about it. And we spend a whole third of our precious, limited, finite lives just wishing for something to be over, to get to the next chapter as fast as we can, to skip ahead. And that's really terrible. That is structural cruelty. But as with all structural cruelty, we just shrug and kind of throw our hands up and say, well, that's just the way it is. If you've just tuned in, you're listening to WXRWLP Milwaukee, River West Radio, and this is The Anti, and I'm your host, NTSC, and we're talking about structural cruelty, which differs from structural violence, which we talk about quite a lot, in that it is not as quantifiably measurable. I'm a very lucky person for a lot of different reasons, but for the point of this example, I'm very lucky because I'm able to mostly support my half of my financial obligations through freelance work. So I work from home mostly. And that affords me the ability to take walks sometimes or to ride my bike. And a lot of people don't get that chance. They don't get opportunities like that. So I am extremely fortunate. So just recently I was faced with an example of structural cruelty that I hadn't recognized before. I had taken it so for granted. But it finally dawned on me the other day. So I was walking to the library, as I often do, to return books and to get new ones that my wife has on hold. She reads a lot, and it gives me a really great excuse to get outside and run an errand. So I was walking my usual route, and it was a really very pleasant day, and I was looking at all the cute little houses in my neighborhood, because I live in a really great part of town with really cute little architecture, and every house has its own kind of unique character. And it finally dawned on me, I realized that the world I live in, the world we all live in, is crushed and kind of ugly and defeated, and not for you. It's not for me. It's not for anyone to appreciate and enjoy. Let me explain. So walk down the street anywhere. Let's get out there. There is a thin sliver of the whole world that you are allowed to inhabit. You can walk on the sidewalk, right? You can go into public spaces or private spaces when they are open, right? Because most of the public slash, you know, private spaces are commercial buildings, as we learned a little while ago. Most of the land in the United States is commercial and industrial buildings. They take up most of everything. That's where you can go. The sidewalk and public land, or private land during, you know, its business hours. That's where you're allowed to be. The world is not meant for you. It is meant for business and automobiles, which is a form of business and commerce, you know, because the street is not for you. The millions of miles of highways and freeways and roads are not for you. You can drive there. Sure, if you're lucky enough to have a vehicle, you can drive on them. But is that where you want to be? Do you want to spend time in your car on the road? The world is a vast network of places that you can exist in on the way to one of the destinations you are allowed to go into. All buildings are closed to you at night, save for where you live and the few public spaces that are not dangerous to go to, right? And the few private spaces that are open for you to go into. You're not even allowed to sit in the same public space for very long. It's called loitering, and there's a law against it, and you can be arrested or fined for it, for existing somewhere for too long that isn't your place, your tiny, limited place. So the odds are very good that you don't own land, right? So the space you actually can call your own is very limited. And even then, most of the time we're only renting it from a landlord or a bank. And even then, eminent domain trumps any ownership you might be able to claim over, for example, your house, if you're lucky enough to own a house, which fewer people can afford. And what of those public spaces you can go to without paying money? Well, they're paved and they're surrounded by other structures, all of which are designed only to serve the movement of goods. So really, in essence, all around you is a prison of structural cruelty, penning you in and dictating where you can and cannot exist. And that's why we yearn for places of beauty, right? The lakefront here in Milwaukee, a forest, the mountains in Colorado, open, free places that are not penned in, that are not paved over, you know, crushed beneath layers of filthy asphalt and burning concrete. And those spaces are dwindling. We are demolishing and paving over the places for few animals remaining, making it impossible for them to survive. And when they dare to try and make a home in or near, you know, these structures that we have created, we exterminate them as vermin. And that's another form of structural cruelty. What would we be able to do? How would we be able to live in a world devoid of these few examples of structural cruelty? Let's take a look at that. For the answer to this question, we will assume a few givens. This theoretical world devoid of structural cruelty actually provides for the essentials of human need. Nobody goes without shelter, food, water, and care. And by the way, for anyone thinking that that is a pipe dream, those things are all achievable using our current level of technology and our existing infrastructure. We could provide healthy food, clean water, and safe housing to every human alive today, and many billions more. So this thought experiment that we'll engage in now is extremely realistic and achievable. Okay, so let's look at our first example. My brother-in-law's sister gets very ill with a brain tumor. That still sucks, and the burden of grief will be heavy upon everyone. But once that news comes, once that terrible news comes, in a world devoid of the structural violence of wage slavery and unnaturally enforced scarcity, my brother and sister-in-law can just scoop their little family up and fly to Madison, where they can stay literally as long as they like to spend quality time with his sister and help his family grieve upon her passing. They can stay for months or years if they desire before going back to Colorado, because they're not afraid of losing the necessities of life, because they are guaranteed to all by all as a gift that we give each other for just being alive. The second example, my wife's coworker, you know, who works at a health clinic. So sliding scale clinics like hers, you know, for low income families, just won't exist in a world where all the necessities of life are guaranteed for many reasons. But that doesn't mean that we still won't need physicians and therapists and, you know, all health professionals. And in point of fact, we'll just have more of those people because the unnatural barrier to entry will no longer exist. But okay, so she gets sick. In this world devoid of structural cruelty, she can just take the time to heal. She can rest and recuperate and get better and then take care of her kid. And the worst that'll happen is she will reschedule some of her appointments, and that's it. The third example, maybe it's the best one of all. So in a world where all of your necessities are guaranteed, you won't be forced to work just to survive. The work you do will be because you enjoy doing it. And we talked about this in the episode on work. People will do the work that is actually necessary and immediately beneficial to everyone and the world instead of performing soul-crushing, mindless, numbing, repetitive, dangerous tasks contrived just to keep the population earning. Instead, you will choose a job that you are passionate about, that has an immediately recognizable and positive impact on the world around you. So, in the case of work, it's more like play. You don't spend all day watching the clock, hoping that the finite moments of your single life flash past you as quickly as possible. You will be allowed to savor and encouraged to savor and enjoy every single moment as equally fulfilling and vital. And the fourth example is great too. In a world where commerce is not the most important thing and the structures of our cities aren't beholden solely to the influence and interests of business and trade, we can do away with almost all roads and ridiculously unnecessary infrastructure, like corporate buildings and commercial buildings and industrial buildings. Traffic no longer exists. Public transportation is freely available and easily accessible. You can walk or bike anywhere. Green space is abundant and free. Public space is everywhere for you to enjoy as the natural heritage of all people, shared freely. Vast tracts of land are all set aside for wildlife, and everything is designed to be replenishing, nourishing, and sustainable. The air is cleaned and purified by multitudes of forests. The water is cleaned and filtered by healthy, vibrant wetlands. Our cities are organic collections of neighborhoods, all interconnected by natural walkways and causeways, no longer crushed beneath concrete. Just imagining what is available to us now, if we decided to move towards it, is actually making me a little sad. Structural cruelty surrounds you. You breathe it and drink it and eat it and suffer in it all day, every day. And please don't fool yourself or believe the hype. Voting won't get rid of structural cruelty and structural violence because voting is part of it. It is structural. Voting is based on this structure, shored up by it and perpetuated by its violence. And its violence is perpetuated by voting. We can only move towards an end to all structural violence and cruelty by changing the dynamics of how we relate to one another and the world around us, not by trying to solve these ancient problems with the same tired, broken tools. Thank you for tuning into The Anti here on WXRW River West Radio. I'm your host, NTSC, and I'll be back again next week to discuss further topics as they relate to freedom and our awesome shared potential. Past episodes can be found at creamcitymedia.com/anti, and more information about the show can be found on riverwestradio.com.